Welcome to Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
Well, it's another winter special here on Mind Food Radio. Now, you don't have to wear one of those, hats that they wear in Russia, Michael, in the studios.
Well, not yet, but I tell you what, it's pretty cold out there, don't you?
It is cold. The weather's gone all bleak all of a sudden.
But you know, Angus has always got a few ideas for the garden, even during winter, and today we're going to be talking about transplanting.
That's plants, that is. We've also got Jenny, the personal trainer, joining us, and Susan Jacobs, and a whole lot more. And of course, if you'd like to win some fabulous prizes, jump on to
mindfood.com, too easy.
And don't forget to also get a subscription and a new issue out as well.
We have. We've got the beautiful French actress, the Oscar-winning actress Marion Cotillard, which it's a beautiful cover, nice and wintry.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
Well, now on Mind Food, we're off to one of our favourite parts of the garden. It's the winter garden.
Well, you know, I've got to tell you, my bulbs still haven't, you know, come up anything. So
I think you planted them too late.
Well, I did. But
you know what you can do?
What?
Just go and buy some and just pretend it. Or look, the kids and everybody will go, wow, that's great.
So you knew I do that most years, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, but look, Angus, we've got Angus Stewart on the phone and, of course, on the show today. And we're still talking about winter gardening, but we thought we'd talk about transplanting plants this time, Angus.
Absolutely. It is the best time of year to transplant a wide range of species, and particularly deciduous ones that have lost all their leaves at this time of year.
So, Angus, what you're saying is now's the time to have a look at your garden and think, okay, well, that's sort of not working there. And you're looking for what, trees that are deciduous that you can move to put them into a new spot?
Well, it's not just the deciduous plants. They're certainly a good time to be think about moving evergreens and also just I guess roses, things like that, which come what they call bare rooted from the nurseries. They actually lift them at this time of year.
Yep.
And knock all the soil off, and it's a much easier way to send them out mail order to gardeners or transport them. So really, when I say transplanting, I'm thinking about that option as well of putting in trees that have been bare rooted.
What's some of the techniques we need to be aware of if we're going to do this? I imagine we've got to get the new posy ready for it, and fertiliser and things will be required.
Well, at this time of year, the reason it's such a great time to do the transplanting is that the plants are in a sort of state of suspended animation. So they're not actually growing actively or at a very, very slow rate. And that means when you transplant them, they're not losing water at the sort of rapid rate they do through spring and summer. The ideal time is sort of coming towards the end of winter, just as the plants are about to wake up and come into spring, because that's when they put on new root growth, which gives them the best possible chance of establishing. So I think it's a great time to be preparing your holes. And one particular thing that I think is important too is sometimes people have a temptation to put a whole lot of compost into the planting hole rather than putting it in the bottom of the hole where it can actually suffer from not, it can actually absorb oxygen from the soil around the roots.
Yep.
Better to actually mix your compost in with the soil that you're going to backfill around the plant.
So for people listening in warmer climates today, what can they be doing in their garden to help out with the moving of things around?
Yeah, well, another really important thing is if you are going to move established plants around your garden is to actually get a spade and cut sort of slots. So rather than digging the plants out all in one go, if you go around and just sort of chop in a circle around the root system, you actually give the plant a little bit of a chance to heal. If you do that some month ahead of when you're going to transplant, you sever the roots that are going to get damaged. And if you give it a month or so, those severed roots will just have a bit of a chance to heal a little bit and put on a bit of sort of callus tissue, so that when you dig the whole plant out, it's a huge sort of trauma, as you can imagine, and the roots have had a little bit of a chance to heal, so that it's not as big a shock.
Well, Angus, I reckon your key words today are suspended animation. Love it. I've worked with a few people like that. And we'll see you next time on the show, hey?
Okay, terrific.
Thanks, Angus.
This is Mind Food Radio, smart thinking.
Well, we've come to a time in the program that we love to talk about. I went for a 7K walk today before
the
show.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I did. And the wind was like gale force. I thought I was climbing the Himalayas.
Who has time for that?
Not many people.
No.
I did today.
You've really got to get a proper job.
No, I know. Well, I try to. I have to have a clear mind when I'm doing Mind Food.
Well, what I... working with me. So what I tend to do is I go to mindfood.com because there's lots of really good
big
exercises and things like that. But on today's show, we've got Jenny, who I absolutely love. Mm-hmm. At the start of this year, we did a health symposium, a Mind Food health symposium, and Jenny was our personal trainer, and she was absolutely fantastic. She gave us lots of different tips and ideas, and I thought, you know, with a different season, it's a whole different sort of kettle of fish. So I'd like to welcome to the show our personal trainer, Jenny. Hi, Jenny.
Hi there, Michael. Hi, Ben.
How are you? Are you in your leotard giving us this lecture today? No.
I love radio. Yes, I am.
So listen, as it's really cold and we don't really want to go outside, although Ben does, even in the rain, for a 7K walk, what can we be doing?
It's probably making that commitment first. A lot of it comes from the mind.
Yes.
You have to make an appointment in your diary to look after yourself.
Yeah.
So get a friend. If you've got time, whether you do something, you can go outside. Realistically, try and get some vitamin D. You know, if you can at lunchtime. I mean, that just lifts your mood and your spirit. Yes, of course, the weather's lousy, but not constantly.
No.
But, you know, little things, you know, go back to those old exercises, skipping ropes, dance videos. I know it sounds probably ridiculous, but you can have a bit of fun with it. You don't have to squat up and down off a chair and lunge, because realistically, people don't.
Yeah, well, that's true.
You know, I don't. I find it hard to get motivated. Getting a Swiss ball, you know, something you can use as a seat, there are fantastic books and internet sites for that you can do some really good back strengthening, core work. Try something different.
Yeah.
That's the lovely thing about winter. I go to stretch classes, yoga classes that I don't do in summer because the weather's so beautiful.
Mm.
And tell us, you know, when I know we talked off air how, you know, all of a sudden someone will come to you in November or December and say, I want a summer body.
Yeah.
And it's a little late. When is a good time? You know, I guess you can be training and get, you know, obviously keeping fit and exercise throughout the year.
Mm.
But when is a good idea or in the year to sort of kick that up and really get ready for summer?
Well, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but, you know, exercise has to be just a lifelong commitment through every season.
Well, it's interesting. An interview we did some months ago, it was with a doctor, and he'd written a book. I think it was all about keeping fit, but it was also from a mind perspective,
yeah.
You know, the power of your brain. And he said, look, to be really honest, he just wasn't into exercise at all, but he hired an exercise cycle and he put it in front of the TV and he'd watched his favourite TV show. It was West Wing. That would put me to sleep. But he, you know, he would put that on. And, you know, before you knew it, he had done his exercise each day. And he said, it's amazing. If you can make it fun and your mind can go somewhere else, before you know it's done.
Mm, and you sleep better.
Yeah, that's the big thing. You do sleep a lot better, don't you?
You do, Ben. It's fundamental.
Do you think, though, that we have to do... Like, years ago, people didn't do all this exercise. Is it because we've become a lot more sedentary? Our jobs are now more sitting with computers and we're always, you know, sitting around. We really don't have to walk too far these days.
Oh, that's a given. My grandmother gave me such a hard time when I joined the gym at 18. You know, she just said we never had to do this.
No.
And that's my grandmother's and my mother's generation too, to be fair. It's our generation.
Mm.
But for the time being, you know, for those winter months, there are some great ideas. And as I say, if you just resource back to mindfood.com, think about doing some flexibility, think about doing some stretch. As simple as doing press-ups, and for new people, you can do press-ups against a wall standing up to get that strength and posture. And it goes, I could go on, you know, like Michael, I didn't give you back the microphone once I got a hold of it back.
I was just thinking, so Michael exciting. Was doing that getting into the studio today, leaning against the door, some push-ups and
trying to breathe. Jenny, thank you so much, honey.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Mind Food Radio. Michael, who do we have on our segment now?
Well, we've got a sports psychologist, Ant Williams, and he's actually one of the panellists at the Mind and Its Potential event that's coming up in October.
Yep.
And Ant's really interesting. He, for many years, was a sports psychologist with different sporting codes.
Yeah.
But he himself was the number three in the world for diving, you know, the free diving.
Yeah, where you hold your breath.
That's right, and go all the way down.
I'd be no good. No,
well, I don't know. You've got a lot of air. A lot of hot air, I've got to tell you.
Andrew, what's the secret?
But I'd like to welcome to the show, Ant.
Thanks very much.
Now, I guess it's quite a thing, isn't it? You know, teaching sports athletes, you know, the whole psychology and wanting to win. But how does that translate into everyday life?
It's actually taken me quite a while to figure out the lessons that sport has taught me and how to transfer them back into my regular life. I think that's actually quite it's a thing that a number of athletes actually grapple with. For me, what my sport taught me was really how to stay calm and how to manage my own emotional state when I was under a lot of pressure, not only competitive pressure, but under pressure from being deep in the ocean where there was a lot of anxiety and fear in what I was doing. Mm.
And that fear can actually be a good thing, can't it? Like, people can really use that to kind of, I guess, advance themselves and get ahead in lots of ways.
Well, for me, the fear is critical because it's what keeps me alive. It lets me know that this is what I'm doing has an element of risk, and I need to manage that risk at all times. And I think there's a crossover lesson for how we manage ourselves in business as well, around mitigating risk, but not being afraid to take the right amount of risk that enables us to innovate, to try things and do things differently.
Do you think sports people become good business people? You know, you've seen Grant Hackett sort of losing lots of different sponsorships and, you know, obviously at the moment having a pretty tough time.
I think it's a real challenge for an athlete, to be honest. And it depends on your sport that you've played, because if you've played at a high level in, say, competitive rugby, then you live in a very sheltered environment. You almost live in a bubble where you don't get, you know, you get a lot of people patting you on the back all the time, telling you how fabulous you are. I'm great at sport. People do love me and they love what I do and how I succeed for my country. And when you're in business, they might just look at you, that guy who sits in the corner office, or, you know, give you recognition for what you've done in sport.
The everyday person that watches these sports men and women on TV and hears them on radio, what can we learn from them to be successful in our own lives?
I've heard a number of athletes speak and present at conferences, and I've personally taken a lot from them around you know, the ability to not give up, to overcome overwhelming odds often. Those stories often fascinate me, because it's seldom the case that someone gets born as a remarkable athlete. They work very, very hard, obviously physically and technically in what they do. They have to learn all these lessons on how to become mentally tough as well. And those are the types of lessons I like to hear from athletes and learn from.
I think you're right. Before the Rugby World Cup last year, I interviewed Graham Henry from the All Blacks, and he said, you know, the real talents are the ones that perhaps as children didn't show huge strength in rugby, but they were very talented at all sorts of different sports. And in fact, that the real talent are the ones that can do more than just one thing.
Yeah, not only do I agree with that, but I think you can take that one step further, and you can take someone who's not necessarily genetically predisposed to do fantastically well in a sport, but through a lot of training and development and by helping them become mentally tough, they can actually succeed and do some remarkable things in that sport.
So at the Mind and Its Potential, Ant, what can we expect to see from you?
In the Mind and Its Potential conference, I'll be a panel member. I'm sharing that panel with one of our top Olympic athletes, a lady, Kerry, who's won gold, actually, in beach volleyball, a gold medal. And so we're going to be discussing our personal stories. Basically, how do you make it at the top in a very demanding sport?
Great. Ant Williams, thanks for being on the show today. And for more information on Ant and Mind and Its Potential event that's happening in October, go to mindfood.com.
Mind Food Radio, smart thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
Now on Mind Food Radio, a very interesting topic, a book that you've been reading, Michael.
I have, by author Susan Jacobs. The book's called In Love and War, and it's fascinating as she talks to, you know, people through the war in terms of falling in love and everything that comes, you know, comes with
relationships.
It. Exactly. Welcome to the show, Susan.
Thank you very much indeed. I'm happy to be here.
Now, this must have been an absolutely fascinating book to research.
It was. It really was. It took me throughout the country. One of the things, because I had to find the war grooms and war brides, and they're all in their
mid to late 80s, and usually one person led me on to two or three more, but it was really a matter of time over the last 3 years in the research of finding them and being able to record their stories.
There must have been some saucy stories.
Yes, there were some saucy ones, but of course it's not always easy for some of the men to talk about these stories. Now, when I say there were, when there were war grooms, it helped if they were widowers because they were more able to talk about some of the things they got up to before they found their one true love.
You know, with age and time is a great healer, were any of them embarrassed or still embarrassed about certain things that had happened when they were younger, or because they were, you know, 80 plus, they were, you know, really comfortable to talk and open up to you?
And the men, the veterans that opened up to me were really comfortable with it. I must say that they were all widowers, but they were very open about it. I'm not saying there were many of them, but based on my research in the archives, I think that what they told me was fairly representative.
You know, they would have seen such horror as well during those war years. You know, that alone, sort of balancing all that. I know my father was in the war, and he never, ever wanted to talk about it, you know?
Right,
and I think that happened to a lot of young people in the war. They saw too much at a very young age.
Yes, I think that's true. And in fact, I think that it's not only they saw the horrors, but a lot of them, they didn't want to talk about the other side, which of course is the side I'm looking at, which is the love, the relationships, maybe the going to the brothel. So it's kind of, you know, the terror of battle and the love side of things, which were not talked about. In fact, one of my veterans said that on the ship coming into Wellington Harbour, he said a whole lot of men threw overboard the photos of their Italian sweethearts because they decided they were just, you know, going to make a complete new start and put it all behind them.
For yourself, it must have been a very interesting journey from a research point of view. What did you learn about yourself from doing this thing?
I felt very much a bond with that generation. I think I came from the generation of sort of make love, not war. And we saw our parents as being very sort of straight-laced and conservative. But when I conducted these interviews and talked with these old people, I realised that we actually have a lot more in common than I had thought. So it's been an interesting journey in that sense for me. And just also, I think just there's a sense of sort of exuberance and of what young people do. We're all just the same at that age.
I also think it's one of those books, you know, when you read, it could be of any time. You know, I know it's certainly set way back, but, you know, even war-torn countries now, you can imagine some of those stories actually happening now, don't you think?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And, in fact, that's what I feel war does heighten emotional and romantic attachments, because the sort of the codes that people live by are kind of overthrown because everything is in upheaval. So I think that happens all over the world where there is conflict. So love just happens everywhere, romantic attachments.
Yeah. Author Susan Jacobs, thank you for being on the show today, and her brand new book, Love and War. It's a great book, a must read. So thank you for being on the show.
Thank you very much indeed.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
Well, on the program, Michael, we've spoken about depression a number of times, but this is a really interesting book and a really interesting person we're talking to.
Yes, I'd like to welcome to the show Professor Sean Holt, who has just written the book Depression and Natural Remedies That Really Work. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Thank you for the invitation.
What's a remedy that works?
Look, there are thousands of natural remedies out there. A lot of them are absolute nonsense. Some of them are quite useful. And in the book, I systematically went through all the ones that people tend to use for depression. And the results are very exciting in that, based on what research is out there, some of them are very, very useful indeed.
You hear people take Hypericum and things like that. Is that one of the natural remedies?
Absolutely. St. John's wort is the most studied herb there is. And it's very effective, there's no doubt about it. But it is a drug, like any other drug. And so it does have side effects, it does have interactions with other drugs. But overall, when you look at all the data, and there's been hundreds of studies of it actually, it seems to be just about as effective as antidepressant medications, if not more. But it definitely seems to have have fewer side effects. And so I think it is a good recommendation.
Now, there's been a huge increase, I guess, across society of depression, or perhaps we're just talking about it a little bit more. Why a book now? I know you've done a lot of research in and around this area, particularly with natural therapies, but why now, and the claim that it's actually better than antidepressants?
Why now? I mean, I've been looking at natural therapies for around 5 or 6 years, pretty much full time. I got into the subject kicking and screaming. I'm a real skeptic on these things, like many of my medical colleagues. But then when I looked at some of the research, I found out that it's not a case that all of them are nonsense. It's just that most of them are. And hidden in there, there are some really useful treatments, and I think it's good that people know about them. So why now? Well, I do a lot of interviews and give a lot of talks to patient groups and GPs and pharmacists, around 50 talks a year. And depression was one of the subjects that keep coming up. It's one of the areas that people use natural remedies for, so there's a clear need, I thought, for good information based on the medical research that's out there.
Now, some of the recommendations or therapies that, you know, you stand by are things like acupuncture and massage and meditation and yoga and, you know, things like expressive art therapies. To a lot of people, they might just be commonplace, but I guess it helps them along their journey in life.
Yeah, look, one of the nice things is I found about 20, 25 therapies that were useful, and about 6 or 7 were particularly strong. And what's nice is that there's something for everyone, I think. So some people may want to pop a pill, and that's fine. There's some you know, biological products you can take. Some people might be more arty inclined, and there's, as you say, expressive art therapies for them. Some people may be more sporty, and there's things they can do. And actually what you can do is mix and match and do a whole heap of these. So look, there's a wide variety of things. Yeah, some of them are part of everyday living. So, for example, exercise and diet. So I do talk about those, and what people assume is that good diet and good exercise are good for mental health is absolutely true, and there's good evidence for that.
Now, one study you found, I think it was an Australian study, that omega-3 fish oil was to be more effective than Prozac in terms of severe depression.
Yeah, remarkable. Not many people know about that. And of all my years of looking at natural health therapy trials, that's one of the most interesting. And yeah, it was a group, a large study with around 300 people with severe depression, not mild. And they had either fluoxetine, which we know as Prozac, or fish oil, or a combination. When you look at the head-to-head between fish oil and Prozac, the ones on the fish oil had a slightly larger reduction in symptoms.
What's
also interesting is you could add the fish oil to the Prozac and get increased effectiveness there.
What is it in omega-3 fish oil that you think that, you know, makes it happen?
Yeah, look, we don't know. And in fact, a lot of these therapies, we don't know what the mechanism is. Antidepressant drugs on the whole tend to be interfering with the serotonin chemical system in the brain. It could well be that that's the case as well.
Professor Sean Holt, thanks for being on the show today. A great book, and one that I think will really help a lot of people. Depression, natural remedies that really work. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
This is Mind Food Radio, smart thinking.
Well, always on this program we get really cool interviews, but this is a really cool idea.
Well, it is. Now, do you know the book range Milk? You know, they're beautiful books. Mm. In fact, I've been given so many different books through, you know, family and all
stunning.
Sort of intimacy, all sorts of different sort of books. And they are curated by a very talented guy by the name of Jeff Blackwell, and he joins us today on the show. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you. Well, thank you for saying that.
Now, your next idea, I think, is very, very clever. This week I came into the Auckland office and there was a brown box waiting for me. I opened it up and there was a very personalised, well-designed, gorgeous-looking book. And for you listeners, you can go onto Mind Food's Facebook page and you can see me holding it. It's absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, I saw you holding it.
But, Jeff, tell us about it because it's a great concept.
Well, it's really in response to, it's a book project, a create your own book project, really, that's founded on the need, I guess, for my company to change with changing times. We've been book publishers for, you know, I've had sort of 25 years as a book publisher, and it's the market is changing dramatically, and people are moving away from books towards computers. And we felt, you know, a bit sad about that as we watched this sort of science start happening within the book trade, and sort of resolved that we wanted to try and find a way to continue to sort of make the books as objects, you know, books with beautiful paper and fabric binding and so on. And really in response to, you know, slowing sales of our normal books, we thought why not create a website that would basically allow us to apply all of the sort of skills and lessons we've learned making books over the last couple of decades to a website that would help ordinary people to make extraordinary books online. And there are other companies out there doing that, but we felt that we could bring a dimension to it that, you know, could lead to books that are not just sort of ordinary board and paper, but actually beautiful objects and able to be customized by individuals when they go online in a way that is really satisfying.
Now, the current trend with bookstores closing and big chains, you know, reducing, and, you know, this huge growth in e-books and, you know, everyone running to that sort of side of it, I guess there's always room in the market for the other extreme. And these tailored books, people can really personalise and customise them, can't they?
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that really motivated me was my dad turned 70 and my family and I made him a book. We sort of surprised him with a book where we sort of broke into his house when he was away one time and sort of copied all the family photos and worked kind of collaboratively, all, you know, with all the grandkids, 20 of us, working together, and we made this book that we loved making together. It was kind of amazing how sort of happy and rewarding it was to make it together because, you know, we're a normal family. And then we sort of pulled it together and surprised him with it on the day of his birthday. And it was just one of the most emotional, happy moments of my life, and I think for all of us. And Dad, it just meant so much to him. We all worked on the book together and told him how much we love him. And it was such a rewarding experience. I just sort of thought, God, it'd be amazing if we could actually, you know, I had the benefit of having a studio to help me put it together, but, you know, if we could find a way to actually allow people to actually do that themselves. And that's where we started.
Wow. And can you do a print run of X amount of books if it's a family
absolutely.
Thing?
Absolutely. I mean, it's designed, one of the really special features that we've developed is the ability to collaborate simultaneously, and I think we're the only people that are doing that, where basically you can start a book and invite up to 9 other people to actually come and work on the book with you, to upload images and to leave each other notes while you're working on it. And so we're hoping that that is going to lead to a sort of much richer experience
Hey, listen, Jeff, great to have you on the show today and
nice
well
to talk
done.
To you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you
so much.
Nice
All
to chat.
Best.
Yeah, good on
yeah,
you.
Yeah, likewise.
Mind Food Radio, smart thinking, the perfect gift idea, is a Mind Food magazine subscription. Visit mindfood.com today.
Michael, have you ever had kinesiology?
Thank goodness you sent the word and I didn't. I haven't actually, but I tell you what, I've met one today.
You're
Her
joking.
Name is Therese Mudgeway, and how's this for a small world? I actually went to school with a sister.
Oh, that'd be right.
I know.
What's kinesiology about?
Exactly. Therese, welcome to the show.
Hi.
What does it all mean? What is it?
Well, kinesiology was developed back in the 1960s by Dr. George Goodhart, who was actually a chiropractor. So he'd worked in the world of Western anatomy and physiology. And then one day, in his wisdom, he decided to go off and study Chinese medicine and acupuncture. And after doing that, he came away and saw that there was some overlap and synergistic fit between the Western anatomy and physiology model and also Chinese medicine. And he basically brought the two together. So if you break it down, kinesi means movement, and ology, obviously, the study of. So it's the study of movement, per se.
So now you see clients. What sort of things do you help and guide them with?
To give you a bit of an example, the youngest client I've ever worked on was 3 weeks old.
Wow.
The oldest is 76. I work with everything from learning disorders, food intolerances, relationship issues, money problems, career, back pain, migraines, sleep apnea, obesity, weight, career, you name it, because it works at a very, very individual level, because it works on the basis that everybody, every being has an innate ability to heal. So nobody and nothing knows your body and the way you think and feel like you do.
But what do you do when you're doing kinesiology? What's the actual thing that
So that's the beauty of it, is that you may come into me with one specific problem, and kinesiology has this technique called muscle testing that allows us to communicate with you, your body, at a conscious and unconscious level.
Oh, is that where you put your arm up in the air and you ask questions?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a biomechanical feedback mechanism that lets me calibrate where the stresses or incongruencies are. So if you said, my name is Bob, let's say, your body knows that that is not the truth, so it causes a stress. So the muscle unlocks per se.
Now, can we try something on Michael now? We're live on the radio. What's something you could do with Michael? You can put his arm out. Which arm?
Why am I always
the guinea pig? All right, here's my arm.
My arm is out.
He's got his right arm out.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. You need
I know.
To
You're doing this
one.
Telepathically.
We need a show and tell. Yeah.
People in the radio are going to love this. Now, what's a question you'd ask Michael?
Well, you could even just say, think of a time that was really, really stressful or traumatic.
Now, what have I got to do? Try and push his arm down.
Try and push his arm down.
Oh, okay. Hang on. Let's bring the mic over here. All right. Try again. Ready? Go.
So, think of a time that was really stressful or traumatic.
Yeah.
He's fighting with me.
Now, this is the tricky. See, this is why you go and do years of training, because I don't want to put words into your mouth, Michael, but it's almost like you're relating to this like it's a strength thing.
Yeah.
It's not a strength thing. It's about the integrity of the muscle. It's not diagnostic. So you don't come and say to me, oh, well, this is my problem and this is why I'm here and I have a formula. It doesn't work like that. What I do is use muscle testing to ask your body what the conscious or unconscious blocks or barriers or stresses are that are preventing you having what you want, whether that's freedom from pain, whether that's lovely clear skin, whether that's the man of your dreams or the ideal dream job or the financial freedom. It's so powerful.
I think we're going to have to get you back on the show. That was absolutely fantastic. Thanks for being on the show.
And just before you go, my left arm's still hanging down. Any techniques to get it back up? See you later. Thanks for being on the show. Well, I didn't realise that you were taking us all on a fabulous trip to New Caledonia.
Funny, we're not, but we are surrounded by brochures. And how beautiful does it actually look?
I know, isn't it lovely?
Now, I went there when I was a teenager.
I've never been there.
Haven't you? It's absolutely beautiful. But on the line today, we've got the general manager from Le Meridien, because I'm so sick of all this wet weather over here, and I thought, well, let's go somewhere sunny. Welcome to the show, Dominique. How are you?
Fine. Nice to hear from you, from Australia.
And I bet you that you've got nice weather today.
Yes, we had blue sky and wonderful weather.
Obviously, with their French background, their food is really interesting because it really is fusion food with all that gorgeous Pacific Island fruit and the fresh fish. It's quite a different mix, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, we have the influence from Europe, from France, and mixed with the ingredients and we say the savoir-faire from New Caledonia. So you have many restaurants over there, over 120 restaurants in the city, and different type of restaurant and mix of I would say traditional French food and tropical and more local food.
Now, interesting enough, you know, for people that want to go there and you know to relax, there's actually much to do though in terms of hiking and golfing and horse riding. There's more than you sort of realize than most Pacific Islands.
New Caledonia is well organized because it's a part of France as well. So you have three different golf courses already, and there is a fourth one coming in next year. And regarding hiking or riding and the jogging around the bay and bicycle.
It's interesting, Michael's doing diving at the moment. There's lots of deep water there where he can do all that wonderful diving.
Well, there's that amazing aquatic biodiversity there. You know, in fact, I think you've got a underwater picture festival or something there, haven't you, in June?
Yes. Diving as well is wonderful. I mean, because we don't have a huge population and many tourists around New Caledonia, we have wonderful spots from the East Coast, Loyalty Island, Isle of Pine as well. And because the lagoon is very large, you can do snorkeling as well.
It sounds fantastic. I think Michael and I can go over there, practice our diving, do a bit of golf, and just relax.
And eat.
And eat, yeah, of course. We forgot about that part. We love the food.
No, you're welcome. You're welcome to come visit us more often. Because I think, New Caledonia is like some place in the world. You come the first time to discover and the next time to enjoy.
Lovely.
I mean, it's really a place that you need to come every year, I would say, to discover the different flavors.
Dominique, thank you very much for being on today's show, and it's a beautiful spot and where you live, so well done.
Thank you, and hope to see you soon.
Thank you very much. Well, there we are, off to Noumea.
And who knew I started diving?
Oh, well, you know, at the end of every show, something's happened. Gardening one week, this week it's diving.
And you're off to a kinesiologist.
Yeah, well, we're going to
I still can't even say that.
Kinesiologist. We're trying to get your asthma under control.
Exactly.
Diving 30 metres, holding your breath for 8 minutes. should be a treat.
What's my new sport? Free diving.
Mm. Imagine Michael in meetings. People say, is there something wrong with him? No, he's just holding his breath. Well, that's a wrap. Another great show out of the way. You got some interesting information today from Angus Stewart. I always love his gardening segments.
We sure do. And if you'd like to hear more about Angus, just go to mindfood.com or sign up to one of our newsletters.
Now, the kinesiology, your arm is still hanging there. We'll get that fixed after the show. What's happening next week?
That was fascinating, wasn't it? Yeah. Well, we hear from Sue Langley. It's all about positive psychology. And she's one of the speakers at the Mind and Its Potential event. We've also got Dean Britscheider. He's a baker, a global baker. He has stores in Denmark, Auckland, Shanghai and Singapore.
All that and more coming up next week right here on Mind Food Radio. Have a safe week.
Mind Food Radio Smart Thinking was produced in the studio of Radio Australasia. Produced by Ben Starr and Brian Newington and Patrick Kayrouse. Bogart Torelli speaking.